Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you.
Welcome to University Drive. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Smith. We have another compelling conversation for you today. As most of us may know, Saturday, the 8th of March is celebrated annually around the world as International Women's Day. In light of this, we're excited to share that for the month of March, we will be focusing on the perspectives, aspirations, and experiences of Bahamian women who will be sharing how their leadership and imagination are making a difference in the lives of many people in the Bahamas and around the world. Our first guest in this series is at the forefront of change. In October, in an interview with Our News, today's guest said, and I quote, "When women win, everybody wins, because when women advance, they take everybody with them," end quote. This profound statement was made by Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell Dean. Dr. Hall Campbell Dean wears several hats. She is a psychologist, researcher, and associate professor at the University of the Bahamas. She is also the chair of the Bahamas National Reparations Committee. Nyambi, welcome back to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Craig. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Awesome. So today is International Women's Day. Now, there are many people who aren't aware, let's just say, or don't see the need and relevance of a day dedicated to women. Mm-hmm. Considering the quote that we shared at the beginning of the show, that's attributed to you, how do you respond to those people?
I would say that, you know, despite the progress that we see happening in our community, in our environment, if we just keep it local, for example, right? In the Bahamas, we have a female commissioner of police. A Bahamian woman is about to be one of six to go into space. We have women that are really the majority of the middle and senior managers in our public sector. But we know that there are also some strides that women still need to make in our society. By and large, women are underrepresented in the House of Assembly. A gender pay gap still exists. And gender-based violence is still at alarmingly high rates. So while there is much to celebrate in the advancements that women are making, there's still a lot of work to be done. And I think when we see a community where there is a fair distribution of justice and equity of opportunities, then everybody has the opportunity to advance.
Well, I think that some people may push back because they mm-hmm. would say that, you know, actually men are, you know, poor us, men are mm-hmm. being pushed out, right? Mm-hmm. There are all these feminists and they want more and women no longer know their place, mm-hmm. which is in the home. And now we're taking another day to focus on them. What more do they want in that? As you said, you know, we have women going to space, we have women in parliament, women are running most of the businesses. What is your response to those people?
I think one of the things that we have to understand is what we mean when we say feminist, right? Because I think for a lot of people, when they hear the word feminist, they think like this, you know, rebel woman with her fist up and her head is bald and she's just like chomping men's heads off every, you know, at every opportunity. Right. But really what a feminist is someone who wants equality between the genders, between gender, right? A feminist is someone who wants everyone in society to have the same opportunities, the same access to opportunities, and the same ability to advance and achieve and strive towards their goals. And so as Chimamanda Ngozi says, we all should be feminists, right? Like, we all should want everybody to have the same opportunities. And one of the things that we note in our society is that that's just not the case. And a lot of times when there is change, or when change happens, when we're trying to have change in our communities, right? Change can be a very uncomfortable thing. And so even if the change is an advancement towards something that is better, some people can perceive that as, well, I have to lose in order for you to win. And so I think when we get a clear understanding of what feminism is, we realize that it's not a matter of pushing down one group of people to elevate another. It's just a matter of doing the work to try and get everybody at the same level.
And I think it's really interesting in terms of, again, your quote from, you know, when women win, everybody wins, because mm-hmm. that has been the struggle, and that has been what has happened in the past. Mm-hmm. There is no time when women have gained anything when others didn't benefit from it as well. Mm-hmm. In particular, women of color and Black women, right? The fights by Black women, women of color, has always been a fight that, you know, ended up benefiting all and sundry.
So absolutely.
And I think it's really important too for people to understand that you don't have to be a woman to be a feminist or to want the things that most feminists want, right? Which is just, you know, equality, to be treated as a human being and have be available to express yourselves in the way that you want to express yourself, to have bodily autonomy, to have mm-hmm. economic opportunities just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, I think that what you said about when women and all win, all people win, like, we even see that in our own history, right? Like, that's not just something that we can look to the North or Europe and say, oh, that happened there. Like, no, in the Bahamas, and this is outlined so beautifully in Marion Bethel's documentary, Womanish Ways, right? Majority rule would not have occurred without women being able to vote. And that's just a fact, right? Like, that's just what it is. If women did not have the opportunity to vote, then majority rule would not have happened in this country. And subsequently, we could gather to say independence and all of the other strides that we've made as a nation, right? And so I think that's a beautiful example of the fact that women didn't get the right to vote and say, okay, how are we going to do this to just, like, advance the needs of what it is that we want and where we're going to... No, it was like, okay, we have this right. Now, how are we going to use it to help everyone in the community? And I don't think that essential goal of women's rights, I don't think that has changed. You know, I think that for, in large part, the majority of women who are advocating for women's rights still feel and perceive that, you know, we're not doing this just for us, but we want to see a better Bahamas. We want to see a better nation. And this is just an essential part of making that happen.
Amazing. Yes, I agree. Now, this year's International Women's Day theme is for all women and girls, mm-hmm. rights, equality, empowerment. How do you see this theme reflected in the Bahamian experience?
Oh, wow. I think in a lot of ways,
You know, the Bahamas is a very small place, but we have ways in which we make it even smaller. You know, with the different identities that we have, the different communities that we have, the different labels that we place on ourselves or place on each other. And so I think that this theme, all the emphasis on all women, is saying that, you know, regardless of how you identify, maybe it is your religion, maybe it is your sexuality, maybe it is your social class, right? That there is something that we are all experiencing as women, and that we all have to galvanize together to advocate for and fight for. So I really think that it is a theme of unity that calls all women to come together, and then all genders to come together.
And you know what? I think that it is a theme that invites conversation. Yes. Right? Something to say, okay, well, all women, well, let's us as women or all women sit down and talk about what it is that we are really trying to achieve, right? If we might have been working in one area or doing something over here, what is it that we can find as the common denominator to allow us to really galvanize our forces and work together? And I mean, I think that this theme of unity is one that is going to be really prevalent throughout this season, right? Mm-hmm. That we're in with everything that is happening in the US and really around the world, that it is clear that if we are going to be able to maintain and advance, that we're going to have to do it together. So I love the theme, and I'm hoping that it is one that we can really embrace and make use of, not just for the month of March, but throughout the year.
Yeah, and I think that's really important too, because oftentimes we have these days, right, where certain things are celebrated. And then after that particular day, things tend to just fizzle out. Do you have any suggestions on how we can move beyond today in terms of what we were talking about, in terms of breaking down these silos and mm-hmm. creating community, right? And it's not just about community with women, it's about community with women and men as well, because we all, I think, have to work together in order to empower, right? A part of the theme, in order to empower and to make sure that women have equality and the same rights as anyone else. Any suggestions in terms of how we move beyond just this day to continue the work?
Yeah. You know what? I think one of the things that we could do, I know there are a number of different organizations, women organizations, church groups that are having events to commemorate this day, businesses, corporations, you know, sororities. I think it would be really interesting if at each one of those women's events, the women in those groups could commit to saying, what is a demographic that we do not have in the room, right? Who yeah. do we know is not here? And how can we, in this moment, make a commitment to try and either bring that demographic to the room, or go to the people that are not here, right? So if you have a women's group that only meets in the East and y'all do things about, you know, the Eastern Road and everything that happens in the East, and everybody that comes lives, you know, in Yamacraw and Winton and Twynham and Elizabeth Estates, make a concerted effort to say, you know what, next month we're going to go south And we're going to have the meeting with the women that meet in the South and focus on Carmichael Road. You see what I'm saying? Just that we begin to recognize, okay, we are a group that is trying and we're working hard and we feel like, you know, what we're doing is very important. But there's a group of people that are not here whose voices we don't know, and that we need to make specific efforts to hear those voices and find out what they have to say as well.
Yeah, I think that's so important because oftentimes, you know, as someone who organizes different events and whatnot, I feel like I'm working alone. I feel like I'm the only one who's interested in this particular thing. For me, I'm talking about maybe a West Indian Lit Conference or the Blue Flamingo Literary Festival. But, you know, I think that I'm the only one doing it, but there are so many other people. I always find out after the fact that there are other people who are interested, but for whatever reason, they don't know that this is what we're doing, right? Even though I'm doing all the things, right? Blasting on social media and newspapers and whatnot. I think it's really difficult sometimes for us to be able to make those connections outside of our circles. And so, yeah, I think something what you're suggesting makes a lot of sense is actually getting boots on the ground and doing the work.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things about being in a small place, right? You're like, well, surely if there's somebody else doing West Indian literature, I would know about them.
Right.
Like, oh, actually, I don't. And there is this person over here. You know, so sometimes I think because we're in a small place, you take for granted that, like, you know, everything that's going on and you don't.
This is true. All right. So I think we've come to the point for our first break. You're listening to University Drive on this International Women's Day. We'll be back after these messages.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Welcome back to University Drive. I'm your host, Craig Smith, and our special guest today is Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell Dean. Now, Nyambi, you head the Bahamas National Reparations Committee. For context, and so that all of our listeners are fully aware of exactly what we mean when we say reparations, can you please explain this for us?
Absolutely. So, in a word, reparations means justice. Right? I like to start with the most basic definition as possible. So when we say reparations, we're talking about justice. Specifically, the Bahamas National Reparations Committee is seeking justice for what the United Nations has designated crimes against humanity. And so these crimes against humanity is the transatlantic chattel slavery, and also the native genocide of the original inhabitants of this region, right? So we know that there are some original inhabitants, native peoples that still thrive and exist in other Caribbean states like Dominica. But in the Bahamas, while, you know, there is some discrepancies about those that remained and those that were extinguished, we know that there was a genocide that happened. So we are seeking justice, right, around those crimes against humanity. And we are doing that as a CARICOM member state, right? So not just the Bahamas going up against Britain all by ourselves, but we are doing that in conjunction with 14 other CARICOM member states that are seeking reparations for these crimes as well.
All right. So we often hear discussions about reparations elsewhere, but what does reparations mean more specifically for the Bahamas? And what forms could it take beyond financial compensation? I think oftentimes when people hear reparations, they automatically think money, right? And yeah, for people my age, we often think of the Dave Chappelle skit where everyone gets some money, right? If you, you know what I'm talking about. So is a part of reparations financial? Is it every descendant of slave gets a wad of cash, or what does that look like?
Sure. So there are lots of different models of reparations, right? The model that CARICOM has embraced is what we call a developmental reparations model. And so what that means is that we are seeking reparations along 10 points of development for our member states. So those 10 points include things like resettlement and repatriation to Africa, assistance with the public health crisis, enhancement of historical, cultural, and knowledge exchanges, psychological rehabilitation, right? So there are 10 different points of development that we are focusing on. And so we're saying that when the reparations come, that the reparations will be placed into these different points of development. So it's not necessarily a cash, right, model like you may see in the United States, or that people in the United States are advocating for, or that even the survivors of the World War II, right, and the Jewish Holocaust received. But it is a developmental model that is saying these are specific areas within the country that need repair. And so it would be a model in which once you live in that country, right, you are going to benefit from the reparations, regardless of where your family was, and your family's historical background.
But Nyambi, why can't we just pull up ourselves by the bootstrap, right? Mm-hmm. Slavery was such a long time ago. Colonialism was such a long time ago. Does mm-hmm. that really have an effect on who we are today as a Bahamian? What that got to do with me? That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't no slave, right? Can you give examples for us of how the historical injustices of slavery and colonialism are present in our economy, in our education system, in our social structures, even today?
Yeah. You know, when people say it was so long ago, I think that we don't really understand that in so many ways it wasn't. I met a woman, granted she was an African-American woman, but her grandmother was enslaved. Mm-hmm. Her grandmother, right? Not her great-great-great-great-great. No, her Grammy was an enslaved person. So we're still just, you know, to give kind of context, we're still living in a society where we have people who are alive, and she was 60, in her 60s. This woman was in her 60s. Yeah. Yeah, so we're living in an environment where we still have people who are alive who were touched by the hands of enslaved people. So one, it's really not as far away as we think. But if we take the example and place it into the local context, in 1957 in the Bahamas, for every one person that had a secondary education, there were 60 people who did not. And that's in 1957. Okay? So we're talking about a community, a society in which the majority of people, right? Because let's go now to 1973, which would have been less than 20 years later, right? We are trying to create a new independent society in which the majority of people are functionally illiterate, right? My grandmother, none of my grandparents had access to secondary education. My parents are the first generation of Bahamians to have access to secondary education. So, how do you build a new nation with a group of people who have not had access to formal education, right? So when we say we have to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, well, I mean, I think we did a pretty good job because when we look at our literacy rates now, they are far better than one in 60, right? But we know that we still have a lot of work to do. And so when we look at the legacy of enslavement, the legacy of colonization, Gail Saunders and Michael Creighton in their book, Islanders in the Stream, have a beautiful quote that says that that legacy was one that never permitted for African people to know their full reality. That the education system was one that did not, it was built to first create good slaves, right? Then create good Christians, then create good citizens. Never create people who know the reality of themselves. And so that is a legacy that we are dealing with, and a legacy that really was only able to begin to be chipped away at until my parents' generation. So when we say reparations, these are the things that we're talking about. Right? Not that we need somebody to come in and save us. We're saving ourselves. But you did a damage, and now I'm trying to fix the damage that you did as well as build. So I just need you to come in and cover your part.
Excellent. Now, what role do educational institutions currently, including the University of the Bahamas, play in advancing the conversation on reparations? Because I think too often many of us engage the conversation without, that history that you just provided for us, right? Without understanding how we still are dealing with the fallout of colonialism, of slavery. So what role would you suggest that educational institutions, including University of the Bahamas, play in advancing the conversations on reparations?
I think, and this might be a controversial take, but I think we need to really start with making history mandatory, right? We have to know what our story is, where we came from, and what it is that we're dealing with. When I told my students this semester that my parents was the first set of Bahamians to have secondary education, they almost fought me. They was like, that ain't no true. People would, and I'm like, no, they were, right? Like you might have had QC, but QC was not free. And QC wasn't really open to everybody, right? So it wasn't until we had GHS. And so a lot of us don't know that. Like we're not aware of that
And
history.
also, that's Nassau.
Right.
Right? What
Exactly.
about those from the Family Islands?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And some who are still like having all age schools, right? And trying to deal with equitable access to education. So, yeah, I mean, I think that we are seeing some definite advancements. We know that there is a new history textbook that is being implemented into the secondary schools. We in the Bahamas National Reparations Committee have embarked upon a school tour where we're trying to go to different schools and talk about what reparations is and how it ties into our current day history or current day circumstances, rather. We have a group of students from CV Bethel who have entered the Center for Reparations Studies reparations debates with other schools in the region and the UK. So we're excited about that. And then I think, you know, at UB, we need to have our history 113, I think it might be, as a general education. I think it is a general education course, right? But we all need to be able to walk away from UB saying, okay, we know that this happened in our country, this happened in our society, these are the things that we are that we had to grapple with and how we are dealing with them now.
But Nambi, don't we already know about history and slavery in the Bahamas? Don't we already know that there were no plantations in the Bahamas, so i.e. therefore slavery wasn't as bad in the Bahamas? I mean, this is what I grew up hearing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. And so, you know what? I grew up hearing that too. But then I did not know about the story of Kate Moss until I was full and grown. Right? Poor Black Kate.
Now, her story has now been made into a fiction novel, a historical fiction by Ian Strawn. So her Blind Days, right? So
yeah,
you can buy that and find out a little bit about her.
Absolutely, absolutely. But even to note that this enslaved girl, really, right, on the island of Crooked Island, where my father is from, that her story was so profound that it was used by abolitionists in the UK, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we think of our context as so small, but we don't realize that, you know, we've had our stories have had international impact, right? We didn't grow up knowing about Pompeii or Quirino. We didn't learn that there was resistance, and that resistance was always a part of the story of the people of the enslaved, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't know that the transatlantic slave trade was distinct and unique because it was the first, one of the first times in which the status of the enslaved person was based on the status of the mother, right? So if your mother was enslaved, you were automatically enslaved, that you could be born a slave and die a slave. Right? These were the things that we don't know about the story. And so there's so much more for us to engage in and so much more to learn. And I think when we know those stories, that the things that we are grappling with right now make a lot more sense.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you for that. Thank you for that brief overview of history. And yeah, I think that it's really important for us to have these conversations. And even in terms of the University of Bahamas, getting back to that point, even having open conversations, I think that the university is a place where we can and we should engage in these conversations. And I don't even think it needs to be something that formal, right? If as a reparations committee, if you want to have a fact, you know, information, basically with talking about the things that you just talked about, I think things like that would be really beneficial For our students, because so many of our students have no idea and are so divorced from that connection to the history. And it's not that we want people to stew in this traumatic history, right? But I think that it's really important for us to understand, because that's a sense of pride as well, understand that we came, where we came from, to where we are now. I mean, that's something to be proud of, and we should engage in that and be willing to talk about that as well. But also understanding how that history also handicapped us in certain ways. And in terms of reparations, how reparations, in terms of what we're calling for, is going to benefit us in helping us get to where we should have been.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And that's one of the key aspects of reparations, right? Because I think sometimes when people hear reparations, they think that it's this new radical thing, but there's so many different societies and contexts in which reparations has happened. And the idea is that you repair to the point at which you would have been had the damage or the injustice not occurred. Right. So that is the ultimate goal. And the Bahamas National Reparations Committee, we're trying to get the word out there too, right? So we had our first social last month, where basically we just picked a local eatery and was like, this is where we're gonna be. If you have any questions about reparations, come and join us. And so, you know, I will plug, follow us on our socials at 242 Reparations on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, because it will forever be Twitter to me, right? or whatever it is now. But, you know, follow us, and you can find us in different areas in the community, and we'll be out at the Dundas this Saturday. So if you just want to pull up and have a chat with us, yeah, come through.
Perfect. All right. This is a good place for us to take our final break of the show. This is University Drive. We'll have more when we return.
Are you ready to make a lasting impact in healthcare? University of the Bahamas is now accepting applications for its brand new Master of Science in Nursing program. With specialized tracks in nursing education, nursing administration, public community health, and adult gerontology, courses will be offered using a blended modality of online and face-to-face. Master advanced skills in patient care, dive into evidence-based practice, and become a leader in health policy. Get hands-on experience working with industry experts and tackling complex healthcare challenges, all with the confidence and compassion that nursing demands. The deadline to apply for the Master of Science in Nursing is January 17, 2025, but get an early start and apply today. Visit ub.edu.bs for the application form. Applications are now open for public community health and nursing education. Call 397-2601 or 397-2602 or email graduate@ub.edu.bs for more information. Classes begin on March 3rd, 2025.
Welcome back to University Drive. Our guest today is Dr. Nambi Hall Campbell Dean. Nambi, I know that you are also involved in Character Day, which is usually held in October. Can you tell me a little bit about Character Day? What's involved? Where did that come from? But also, are we as a society paying enough attention to intentionally cultivating good character?
Sure. So Character Day Bahamas is an initiative that sprung out of the Pace School for Girls. And the organizers there were realizing that they were providing, you know, the resources and the education for the young girls in this program, which is a program for teenage mothers, right? But a large part of what they were missing was just to focus on their self-esteem, right? Their sense of self, their self-efficacy, and their character. And so we were able to collaborate with an initiative out of the US, a character day initiative, and just begin to have sessions every year. It's kind of like the way that I start the school year, where we work with educators, HR representatives, giving workshops on different themes around building character and implementing good character in your schools and in your workplaces.
Interesting. What has been the, how have the young women, I guess, is this just a program for women, young women?
No. So it started with, right, the PACE initiative, but now we have schools throughout the Ministry of Education that send their guidance counselors or different teachers and administrators to the Character Day workshops every year. So for example, I know in the past they had on Character Day, their entire school go to different places on the island and do and volunteer, right? Some would go to like the Percy Rogers home and volunteer there. Some would do like beach cleanups, but the whole school would just leave campus and do something around volunteering and service on Character Day. We have representatives that hail from Auckland and the Berry Islands. So it's really grown to be an initiative that is throughout the archipelago, which is something that I'm really excited about. And we have different character programs. There are grants that people have gotten. So they've initiated programs like mindfulness, after-school programs for kids, teaching kids how to be mindful and engage their breath, and maybe even a little bit of yoga, Craig. I think you'd like that, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of different initiatives have occurred. We have our character heroes, where we have people nominate persons in their communities or their workplaces or their schools that demonstrate exemplary character and maybe, you know, aren't on the news or get the major recognition, but through character, our character heroes, they get to be acknowledged for demonstrating good character in their environments. So I think it's a really important initiative. And to your question about character in our society, I think that it's something that at our core, we need to continue to do. You know, when I think about like traditionally, when we think about like Bahamian society, manners was very important, right? Mm-hmm. Manners and respect would take you around the world, grow up hearing that. And now you sit at a red light, and before the light even turns green, right? People are honking you off that light so fast and calling you this and that. So I think that a focus on character is something that is very much needed in our society.
Are there psychological differences in how character is developed in small island nations like the Bahamas compared to larger countries?
Wow. I think that would be a really interesting thing to research or look up. I know we had a conversation in one of my classes the other day. It's a personality psychology class. And so because I'm a community psychologist, I often take the conversation outside the realm of the individual and look more at a macro level. But asking how do things like tourism impact the personality, right? Or the character development of a community. When you live in a service-based economy, does that help to develop good character, or does that help to develop, as some of the students were arguing, a fake character, you know, a persona, and then you're always trying to question like who you are really. So yeah, I think that would be interesting to know, to see what environmental factors impact our character development as well.
Yeah, I think Jamaica Kincaid is very interesting. I can't remember the quote from A Small Place specifically, where she talks about, again, of course, Antigua being a tourist economy, and the tourists who came in, who and the colonizers who came in, who acted like animals and expected the locals to have good manners, right? And the quote is something like, good manners is the position of the weak, or something like that. And so I just thought that that's interesting in terms of thinking about that, the tourist economy, and how we think about character and what that means in terms of good manners, which is about acquiescing and, you know, just nodding and smiling and saying yes. Is that necessarily good character, right? Because I think sometimes when we think about good character, we don't necessarily think about the fact that, you know, me standing on principle and refusing to be treated in a particular way, that that is good character as well, right? And I think in terms of nation building, can you talk a little bit about the importance of good, what are the qualities of a good character? Because I don't know that, you know, getting back to your point, yes, saying good morning and good evening and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, those are important aspects of good character, but it's more than, I would argue that it's more than that, right? It has to be more than just acquiescence. Can you talk a little bit more about how we can train young people to develop good character, which also includes standing on principle and refusing to be disrespected in certain ways, right? And again, I'm not talking about, you know, someone speaks ill to you and you fight, but in terms of creating a character, a sense of self that empowers you to speak truth to power.
Right. And that's so interesting, right? That's a really, I think, interesting question, because in so many ways, good character is tied to this perception of being mannerly, right? And again, like if we go back to our history, mannerly for who? Right? Mannerly for what purpose? Like what is it that we're really trying to serve? In Character Day Bahamas, especially when we first started, we always used to highlight this periodic table of characters, right? So we're talking about not just good manners, but things like grit, zeal, love of learning, courage, right? Maya Angelou has a quote where she said that courage is her favorite character, because without courage, you cannot enact any other character consistently or well, right? Like you need courage to love. You need courage to stand up in the face of injustice, right? And say, no, you know, we're not going to do it that way, even if you do perceive me as rude or unmannerly or not fit for service. So I think that it's really interesting, because in so many ways we value the person who can pop off quickly and have a strong retort, right? But does that also manifest into you being able to stand in the face of not just a slight of your ego, but an affront to your rights?
So in this conversation about character and this day being what it is, Who have been some of the people most influential in your life, helping you to build that character? Who are some of those women who have influenced you?
Wow, I mean, definitely my mother and my aunt. I mentioned my grandmother. So my grandmother was a straw vendor. She was born in Andres in a little community in North Andres that doesn't even exist anymore. And she raised five children, right? With the help of my grandfather, indeed, he was there and around, right? But you think about like this woman who only had a third grade education, but yet she made sure that all of her children were educated, that she raised two of whom were really strong women that now have their own business and have made strides in the community and participated. I often, or I think at this later stage in my life, realized that I became a community psychologist because my mom and my aunt were always involved in something, right? It wasn't like a Saturday where you could just sleep in. It was like, no, we gotta go because we gotta do this thing at the church is having a garage sale, or this organization is doing a fun run, or you have to be a part of the tea to help, right? It was always something that was happening. And so, I mean, the women in my life have been really instrumental, but my father as well, just, my family and my community, my mentors in school and in college, who ironically have all been men for the most part, right? Yeah, I've been really, really lucky, I think, to have really strong people in my journey to help guide me.
Amazing. And how are you paying that investment forward to others?
So, I mean, through Character Day Bahamas, right? Through the National Reparations Committee, through hopefully my students would see it in my teaching. You never
Hold
know
your breath.
what exactly. You never know what they're taking away, and sometimes you don't know until after they've left. Right. And they come back and you see them in Starbucks and they're like, I don't know if you remember me, but I was in your class and you said this. And you get that little nugget that they remember and they hold on to. But I think I try to do it just in really being authentic in what it is that I'm doing and that I engage in things that genuinely excite me and that I feel like I can engage in with my whole self, and enthusiastically, right? So this work with reparations is it's not just like a title for me. It's something that I feel is our way towards not just justice, but freedom, right? As a people. And so yeah, that's what motivates me and keeps me going and tries and that's the way in which I try to pay it forward.
Awesome, amazing. Okay, I think that we've reached the end of our show. Do you have any final thoughts to share before we head out?
I would just like to say thank you for this opportunity. I think that, and just to remind everyone that again, right, when women win, we all win. Sometimes it may feel like advancements in one way is a detriment to the other, but that we're all in this together, right? And so we have to figure out how we're going to work together. listen to each other, go in spaces that we may feel uncomfortable in or unfamiliar with, but now is the time to do it. And we've made big strides in the past, and we can do so in the present and in our future.
All right. Thank you. Nyambi, thank you for your leadership and your insights. You've given us so much to think about today, from equity and women's empowerment, reparations, to ethics and character. Before we wrap up, how can our listeners support any of the initiatives that you've spoken about today?
Yeah, so definitely follow us on the Bahamas National Reparations Committee on our social media pages. That is at 242 Reparations on Instagram and Facebook, as well as Twitter or X. And search us out. You can find me at the University of the Bahamas. Or on my Instagram, which is Culture Community Connection as well. We're all there.
Thank you so much. That's it for today's episode of the show. But before we go, on this International Women's Day, I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge that I too, like my Nambi listening to you, I too come from a home that was really held up by women, from my grandmother, Leonie Pickstock, my mother, Pamela Smith, her sisters, Wilhelmina Thurston, Faye Pickstock, Charlene Wildgoose. They were all, most of them, single women who raised strong, independent children. And I just want to take this time to recognize each of them for being strong, independent Bahamian women who just inspired me to achieve everything that I have achieved up to this point. And so I just really want to make sure that hopefully they're listening and they know how much I appreciate and thank them for all that they've done in my life.
Ashe.
So that's it for our show. Join us next time for University Drive. I'm Dr. Craig Smith, signing off for now.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.